Hi, this is Barry Listed, Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science It Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. In today's segment, we speak with Mary Grace Crissy of SAS. Major Crissy is a product marketing manager who specializes in operations research and related tools. Before joining SAS, she was an officer with the U.S. Air Force. She's joining us today to give an overview of the math modeling industry and how it supports other businesses. Mary, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
For starters, what kind of products are you responsible for at SAS?
I'm a marketing manager for the technology, for the tools of analytics. Those are the core tools of statistics, of operations research, data mining, text mining, forecasting.
And please talk a little bit about some of the technologies that people in the industry know well, but that our audience may just be learning about.
Well, in our analytics is in our day-to-day life, and many people don't realize what numbers are really doing for us and what this analytics can do. So everything from scheduling your bus schedules or your taxi schedule in the morning can be done by analytics, and it touches every part of your life. So it's hard for me to answer that question in a 20-second reply because there's just so much in our daily life that has been changed by the way we look at numbers today.
Let's take a look at one technology used in operations research, and that's optimization. Tell us what optimization is and where does optimization fit in with related technologies, things like forecasting, data mining.
Certainly. I like to define optimization as being efficient and effective. And in order to improve anything we're doing today, you can optimize it. Unfortunately, that's becoming to be a very overused word, and it doesn't always have math involved.
Right, it's kind of crept into the common language and has a general meaning these days.
But those of us in the operations research field have a much more precise definition to it. And we don't want you to we don't believe you could get the most value out of optimization until you started at the beginning, which may be just cleaning your data, finding your data, looking and observing your data. And then you could look at, see, forecasting why you are where you are today and where you might be tomorrow. And until you've kind of come up a little analytic curve, then you can get to asking the questions of how could we do things better. But first you have to know what you did last year, where you are today, and then you can look forward and get better.
Mm-hmm.
So they are all tied together.
We'll take a look at a Business Week survey that I know that you've referred to in the past. Business Week conducted a survey of C-level executives on the subject of using data better and applying business analytics. And from what I understand, the results were mixed. Can you review some of the highlights?
Certainly. People know that they want to be competitive. In fact, you have to be surviving today. You have to be a little bit ahead of your competitors or somebody will acquire you and buy you out. And if you use analytics effectively and use these technologies, they can get you ahead. So the top executives are aware of this and they want to do it. However, many of them fail to act and look to the data yet. They know they should be, but they're still acting on gut instincts and trying to make fast decisions because they don't believe they can get to their IT shop and get the software loaded in time to make the decision tomorrow in the boardroom.
One finding, I understand, is that executives value data but aren't adopting technologies that use it better. You want to explain or tell us a little bit more about that finding?
Yes, I think there's been a disconnect in that people still think math is an academic realm and there's a lot of theory behind it. And they can appreciate more that they are seeing the value of effectively scoring good customers and they're hearing about results. But in order to actively take advantage of it in your business, you have to have cooperation across your business. And I think there's a lot of non-cooperation happening still in our databases. We have big old-fashioned, I call it legacy systems of IT, that don't yet know how to talk to these innovative thinkers that are doing some of the operations research that you see at Informs today. So until we communicate more across our organization between the people who own the data and the people who want to run with the data, the next step is the deployment, and that's the implementing the changes that can come from gaining insights, and that's the business domain users, those are the operational day-to-day users. So I see three major places where big obstacles will happen. Even if the insights are wonderful and the math model comes up with an answer, if you can't act on it and you can't change policy and put it into your day-to-day business, you know, the bottom results won't happen, the numbers won't change, and your profits won't go up.
Let's talk a little bit about the benefits that executives report gaining from business analytics. And this is the executive rather than people in the profession like us who kind of wave the flag. What do you hear from executives? Or what did Business Week hear from executives?
In the Air Force, our executives, which were the generals and the high-ranking officials in the Air Force, what they liked about it when we started applying some of these technologies, we applied a business query lookup of the demographics. Instead of going to their PhD level, master's degree math students and asking them how many pilots are there in the Air Force and where are the pilots, or they were trying to make some decision on some executive level strategic planning. I don't know what they were making the decision on, but they asked a question on how many people are they or where are these people with these certain skills. And they would have to take time away from the analysts who were maybe working on OR-type problems to just do a data pull. And now, with the technologies, we're putting a lot of this reporting characteristics in their hands, and they could use a pull-down menu, and they could look at their own data, and they can answer a lot of questions themselves, which is what they like to have the power. They like to see their data. They can see their company. The executives don't have to rely on somebody else, so they can use the technology and the computer and in 5 minutes, you know, find their answer instead of going down to the secretary and the staff summary sheet and going down three levels of people and then going back up to before it gets to the general. And it basically gives them a quicker access. It gives them, they like to play with the data. They like to be familiar with the Air Force and their people. And the third thing is they were able to get more value from their officers that were trained in doing more than lookup data skills so that they were able to do some real insightful research for them.
Now, the report also talks about obstacles to adoption. We've talked about some of the obstacles in a kind of rudimentary sense. Are there others that we ought to take note of?
There most likely would be competing priorities. I would say everybody wants to have their budget funded or their special project given number one attention. And that's where everybody thinks they're most important. So how do you break through with that? You need to have somebody at the top. We like to say you have some evangelist that believes that data has insights and there is value in facts and fact-based decision making, rather than we're more important than you and, mm-hmm. and just trying to base it on charisma or good old boy network. So if you have somebody that really does believe in the value of true data as a senior leader, that can make the operations research become implemented and become the way.
And that kind of leads into the next question. You've partially answered it. What makes for a business environment that starts using business analytics?
Lots of times they're based on performance, and you want to have good performance-based management, but people don't really think about what it takes to succeed. So if you start asking companies, what are your goals? What are your measures? What do you mean as succeeding? And quite often it's dollars in a profit-making business. You want to have a positive bottom line, or you want your stocks to go up. But there's several companies, especially in the health professions today, where you're talking about saving lives. That's hard to put a dollar figure for. So we need to actually do a lot of questioning and answering to businesses to find out what is it that your priorities are, what is it that your goals are, and this type of performance-based looking at your organization is a whole new way of thinking, and it takes an OR analyst to go back and forth and develop, cultivate a good relationship to trust each other, to pull out these questions that are needing to be solved, and then to go forward and tackle them.
And analysts are always obsessive about data, and I think you've noted that the Business Week report talks about the problems that organizations have making their data neat enough to apply analytics. What is the problem?
Well, neat enough is, another word is being cleansed, is being accurate. Some people may say, for example, in the Air Force situation, a pilot. Now, does that mean a pilot who got his wings and learned how to be a pilot and is now doing a desk job because he you know, lost his eyesight? He was once a pilot, is not flying today? Or is this meaning a pilot who's a fighter pilot? That comes down to definitions of data, and there may be a field in the personnel data set that has P for pilot, and somebody might be counting off of that, and somebody else might be counting pilot as the people that are actually in that duty right now today. So definitions of data, and then when you merge the data sets and you put data from two different places and they had two different definitions together, things can get completely tangled up. There may be missing data that people overwrite, and they change gender on you, and it was somebody who was one sex 1 year, and lo and behold, the database, they come up another way, and there's all kinds of strange problems that would be like dirty data. So actually getting your data straight is no small task, and it needs to be looked at carefully.
So right up front, you have to take very careful steps to make sure that the data is collected properly and that errors aren't made along the way.
And many times you weren't saving some of the data fields that you are collecting today. We have much more memory and much more data collection with our barcode readers. And so you may have data now coming from different sources that you didn't have in the past. So you have a lot more merging than you ever had to do before.
And you can't do that historical analysis on data that just didn't exist.
Right, but you don't want to throw away all the data that you do have, so there's some interesting ways of handling, saving what you have and gaining value from it.
I understand that there are some industries that are just beginning to use analytics. Is that your impression as well?
I think they're beginning to appreciate the value more. We've had in SaaS, the statistical world has been having financial banks have been using numbers, obviously with dollars and cents. They've been very comfortable with that, and they're into giving credit cards and scoring customers. So they've been doing this type of critiques and metrics for many years. But there's smaller companies, small businesses, I would say, and there's new little retail stores, mom-and-pop shops that would never think of doing an analytical optimization of how much inventory they should store today and what should they be pricing their next candy figure sale for the kids at school tomorrow. They don't even fathom those types of things. But they're entering now into the global age where they could learn from what other big companies are doing, and they could actually change the way they're doing and gain value from analytics, just like the big expensive companies.
So even small businesses, and I know that the definition of a small business can be a lot larger than a single retail store, but even small businesses can benefit from using analytics.
Yes, most definitely. And even if they don't have a lot of data, they could gather data from the web from similar businesses that are in their same line of work. You can research. There's an awful lot out there in the public data.
Social media is a topic that I know that you've tracked. Lots of people are having fun with social media. Marketers are beginning to discover it. What are some of the hot new technologies emerging that analyze social media use?
Well, along those lines of what the retailers could find, people are blogging and they're emailing and they're putting chat rooms and Facebooking and Twittering. They may be talking about that mom and pop store, and they may be saying positive things or negative things, finding the sentiment analysis, finding out if it meant to be a praise or was that a derogatory term.
So are you coding expressions?
Yes, it's actually text. It's reading the text. So instead of analytic number crunching, we're analytic word crunching, and we're actually trying to look at the expressions people are using.
I know the social scientists have tried to do that in the past, and it's been difficult, but you're finding now that you're developing the tools that can do that.
Yes, there's been linguistic studies going on for ages, and artificial intelligence has been trying to tackle this for 30, 40 years, and we're finally getting to the age now where it's a combination, just like operations research is a combination of skills from several different backgrounds and industries. This area, too, is benefiting from the linguistics and the number crunchers together. Finding patterns. We're finding patterns. We're doing more than word count. We're actually doing a lot of interesting clustering and networking to find out links between one person's conversation and another, and what are the topics that are coming up that might be identifying a possible terrorist alert somewhere because a certain amount of topics are going on. All the social media is more than just chit-chat between the teenagers who are texting on their phones. There's actually a whole new body of data out there that we can use for business and we can use to learn and improve our daily life.
And are we using that data to identify trends, or are we using it in an even more particular way?
Well, it's yet to be seen, and not too many people are doing text analytics. It's a buzz thing right now that we're interested in. I would still say it's emerging. I would say the potential is there. I'm ready to see what people are going to do with it.
Mm-hmm. We only have time for a handful more questions. You often refer to a white paper chart that shows the progression of decision support tools on one axis and ROI, return on investment, on the other. The chart goes from raw data to standard reports to descriptive modeling, predictive modeling, and finally optimization, which we talked about before. For those who can't see the chart, can you help us visualize it and why it's important?
Okay, I like to call this sometimes our rolling bubbles, our Peapod chart. It's basically a linear diagram that rises up to the right, so you always like to show improvement and going things up at the top, and since we're operations researchers, we put ourselves up at the top right bubble, which means most value, most ROI, and it kind of means the most analytic rigor to it. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not analytic rigor in any of the places left on the line. You have to start with the data. So back at the 0-0 section of the graph would be getting the data. And that's not meant to be a small feat. It's not meant to be less important than the top right corner of the line. It was, you need to start with real good data. That's where I have the expression garbage in equals garbage out, no matter, you know, if you don't put any value in. And then you can go on up the chain, and this is where we have several different vendors, technology vendors, because I'm working for SAS now, the business intelligent tools that come in and help people build reports and work with their data. And this reports is a way of viewing data, and the more you can get the data to tell you a story, the better. And so there's a lot of different software now that's helping people visualize and explore that data. And then from there, there's some fantastic data mining packages and forecasting routines that can also help you really understand where you're going and do some what-if analysis before you get to the optimization world. But it's a linear diagram that you're asking me to show you. But actually, we decided that wasn't enough. We didn't want to stop at the top corner. It's a repetitive circle. So we actually draw these arrows that go back to the 0-0 because it's a continual learning process. So in the real dynamic world that we live in, data is always coming at you. So you can't just optimize on the data from yesterday. You need to go back and continually improve, continually forecast, relook. Even if it's a problem you have solved in school and you formulated it, the real world is new and changing. So you better be looking at your models again and seeing if they need to be updated.
We talked about optimization before, and I know that in some of the things you've written or in this white paper, we talk about resource optimization. How does resource optimization stand out? What do we mean by that?
That's more on the allocation end of it. So we're talking about a bunch of resources. They could be people, or they could be things, such as even labor. Like you're trying to staff the McDonald's cashier front, and you need to set up a labor chart. So those are your allocation things. And you need to do certain time slots, and you know when they're busy, when it's going to be crowded. You need to have extra workers, and you need to keep them on when they're not in school, and so you build a constraint model about you need the high school kids to be working less than full-time or whatever your state's legal law is, and you actually build a model. So that resource optimization that you do for McDonald's would be an allocation model, and that's what I describe in the paper.
And did we want to go into some of the steps towards that?
Yeah, I could do that. Let's see. I had the first step would be, again, to define your goals, and that'd be setting the strategy, and it's something that sounds so common sense, but it's amazing that a lot of businesses don't sit back and say, well, what is it that I'm calling you in for? Sometimes we get called in as modelers and operations researchers because there's a challenge. They don't know how to define the problem, and we have to actually guide their hand and say, okay, tell me, what's your overall arching goal? What's your mission statement? And then once we get that from them, we have to say, and what are you doing to ensure we can get that? That's the foster accountability. The step two is that senior influencer that's going to say, if we do come on board and help you achieve these goals, are you really going to implement them? And if not, then it's like we want to step back and say, well, then you're just wishing for things, but if you're not going to change. And this ability to change cultures, I think one of the reasons that operations researchers is going to be successful in the future, because in the past, there was this whole study of will we change or do I want to change? It doesn't matter anymore. The world has changed, and I think people are overcoming that.
So I think certainly over the last decade or so, we have this sense of rapid change.
And so everybody's realizing that they just have to accept change. So that's not a problem anymore. The third step was, again, once you know what you want to get and you decided you're ready to try something new, is what do you have today? What is the data? What's the sources of data do you have? And and what can you really change, and where are your fixed constraints that you have to work with. And we help, you know, formulate a math model in those kind of terms with decision variables and constraints. And then the fourth step in the resource allocation would be translating whatever business rules they might currently have, and we actually put them into the ABCs and the Greek letters of the mathematical model. And we formulate it in terms of a linear model, or whatever it turns out to be. We listen to their full scenario. And then once you push the solve button and you do your math on the problem, you actually want to deploy it and test it and implement. And that's where it doesn't really stop then. It goes back to the beginning and verifies that it was actually meets the goal that they want. And you go back through the five steps again to ensure it's helpful to the real world.
Final question. We've talked about some of the process that's involved. Can you give us an example of projects that succeeded using OR tools like the ones that you talked about?
Sure. Let's say there was a major appliance company that was going around making service calls, and they'd get a call saying our washing machine isn't working. And so we'd schedule a little truck to come up and see what's wrong. Well, if it's a minor fix, we hope they would have the correct part on their car. But now microwaves and washing machines today are fully electronic with all kinds of circuits and all kinds of things. And so you want to know which ones are under warranty, and you have to have that itemized in there so you know if it's a free repair job or is this an expensive repair job. So you're collecting data based on warranty to know what they should have on the car, and which car should you send to which part of the neighborhood. And so it ended up being more of a historical pull, and what data do we have available and what cars to send out. It was a forecasting problem, so we used forecasting techniques. We used routing to figure out the shortest path and save gas, and we also did the scheduling of the technicians and help desk people to fix those things.
And did the company feel that they were better off than when they started?
Yes, and those are what we always like to find, the statistics, that they saved 30%. They were able to answer. They were able to answer calls without having to go back to the warehouse and come back a second day. So they were able to do 30% more of the call satisfaction on the first trip.
And 30% is a pretty significant number. That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Mary Grace Crissy of SAS. Mary, thank you for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more information about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.